Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey fam, before this new episode of Last Drinks, why not jump online and order yourself some sparkling tea from budsandbeads.com.au. Buds and Beads Sparkling Tea, where every bubble tells a story. And don't forget to use the code LASTDRINKS20. This will give you 20% off your order. You're welcome.
It's time for another episode of Last Drinks, a podcast where we have conversations for the sober and the sober curious, hosted by me, Maz Compton, sober since 2015.
Hey fam, how you going? Yes, it is time for another episode of Last Drinks. I wanted to quickly share something funny. So my kid, my four-year-old Henry, has started calling me Buongiorno. And I don't know what it means. It feels like it's either French or Italian. I hope that it means like you're a beautiful being, but I have no idea what it means. And so in context, I'll be like, hey, buddy, I'm trying to think of an example. Like, let's say we're making cookies or something in the kitchen and I'm like, why don't you go and grab your step? Go and grab your little bamboo step so that you can get up and help me make the cookies. And he'll be like, okay, bonjour day. Or I'll give him a compliment and he'll say, thank you, bonjour day. And I don't know what it means. I hope it's a compliment. I'm sure it is. Anyway. Take that one away with you. Put that in your back pocket. Bit of a cute story. Hopefully put a smile on your face. I'll tell you something that put a smile on my face was this message on my Instagram from Anna. Hi, Maz. I just wanted to reach out and say I love your pod and have totally binged the shit out of it. Thanks, Anna. I'm 4 weeks booze-free today. It's a huge achievement for me. I'd be hanging for 1 o'clock every afternoon feeling like I needed that relief, and it feels so good to have it out of my mind and not feel guilty. Instantly, I started sleeping better. I'm more patient with the kids and have so much more energy. When you say you've unlocked a superpower, girl, you are so right. My new goal is 100 days, but honestly, just taking drinking off the table is pretty appealing too. Thanks, Maz. Your pod is awesome. Thanks, Anna. You're awesome. I just love hearing from you. That just lights me up and makes me feel so great. It's why I keep doing this every week. I've mentioned before, it is a passion project. I do this because I love it and it really just ticks a bit of a soul box for me. I love it because it helps people and I know it connects with people and I think it gets people through some dark times and it gets people through to those lighter times and I just love being a part of that. So today I'm chatting to Vari McChinchy. What a great name. McChinchy. She has a pretty cool accent, not going to lie. I was going to do an extra long episode with her just because I love hearing her talk because she's Scottish Australian. She's originally from Glasgow. I'm not going to try and do an accent because that would just highly embarrass myself, which I do not need to do right now. She's a coach, a writer. She's super creative. She's a designer. What I love is she works with people around the themes of courage. She has a book called Seeds of Courage, which is a collection of stories, ideas, and snippets of wisdom on how to live a big life through small and gentle acts of courage. And I think that one of the most courageous things you can do is stop drinking, which she has done and I have done, and that is exactly why we sat down to have a chat about it. So enjoy this episode of Last Drinks with Vari McChinchy, and I'll catch you next week. I think the thing that's appealing about podcasting is that it's like a conversation that you would have with somebody that you just met for the first time. And so you cover off the basics, but that's really important because there's not a level of assumed knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, there's such an easier flow to the conversation when it's not, yeah, you've done all this research behind it. So yeah, I love that format. I know for me that's...
There's no agenda here. Do you know what I mean? Like this is where I feel like this really evokes a different set of skills in me where that it's just like, what are we going to discover about your story that can help somebody else who's on the journey, you know? Yeah. And if you are the person sticking their hand up going, I've got something that I think could be really helpful for somebody else and I'm going to be vulnerable enough to share, then I'm like, well, here's the platform and here's the room. So with that said, Vari, can you tell me about your last drink?
Yeah, sure. So my last drink was July 2018, so just over 5 years ago now. And what was really interesting for me at the time was it was just a random Sunday evening. And that's so unlike me in so many ways because I'm a planner and I like to be organized and kind of have things scheduled. And so for me to just decide then without any pre-planning was quite out of character for me. But previous to that, and probably a lifetime previous to that, I knew that I didn't have a healthy relationship with alcohol. So I had done the dry Julys, the Feb fasts, you know, the kind of quick sprint around the block, as I like to kind of frame it, and gone alcohol free for the month. And it was really easy. I'm quite competitive by nature. And so I'm like, yeah, I can do this. This is easy. But this felt different and it felt like I wanted to take a more extended period off of drinking without there being a finish line for me to work towards. So yeah, it was just a random Sunday evening. I poured myself a glass of wine and I sat down on the couch and I just decided, no, I didn't want to have it, which was so unlike me. I kind of didn't recognize myself in that moment. Poured it down the sink, poured the rest of the bottle down the sink. And that was it for me. That was the last drink that I had. So it was completely without any kind of fanfare or any drama attached to it. But there was just this knowing at the time that it felt really significant, more so than it had in the past where, you know, I would tell everyone that I was going to be, you know, off the drink for the month. This just was like a quiet kind of conversation with myself that I didn't even realize I was about to have. So yeah, it was underwhelming in the most beautiful and special way.
And powerful too. I think to internalize those conversations sometimes is a really different thing than to tell everybody what you're doing. So when you were doing your Feb fast and your months off, and I did all of that too, did you find any, you know, when you would come to the end of the month, did you feel like you went into overdrive the following month? Like it almost was a counterproductive situation?
Absolutely. I found that I could easily do the month off. And again, I would tell every person that wanted to listen or not want to listen that I was off alcohol for the month. And then I would get back into it with the idea that I would be more intentional about my drinking. And I would pull back a little bit. And that would probably last for a week or two. And then a month after that month off, I would find that it was probably more of a kind of tenacious habit than it had been before I'd taken the month off. So there was definitely a bit of a time lag from the month off to then kind of ramping back up again to my usual level, but it felt like it went a step beyond that each time. So yeah, it definitely had that kind of counter result that we're all hoping for when we take those months off. It was a reset in some ways, but the patterns and the habits were still there. And it's almost like my kind of brain and my body just needed to recalibrate back to what it knew and what it felt familiar with, which was not a healthy situation, you know, and one that I didn't want to continue with.
It's something that I come across a lot in these conversations of, you know, dabbling with a month off here and then it not quote unquote working. And I think that is really because it's rarely about the alcohol and it's more about self and awareness. And so if you're just taking a month off booze with the focus on being just simply the fact that you're not drinking and that's all you hone in on is like, I'm not drinking, I'm abstaining from alcohol, I'm not going to have alcohol, you really miss the point of the work you can accomplish when you don't have alcohol in your system, which is that next layer and that deeper level, which I think you landed on in July.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I realized was I could take the month off alcohol, but I would find other ways to distract myself from the things that were really looking for my attention. So, and it's one of those sneaky little things that I've seen with a lot of people who take a month off alcohol because they're not drinking, so they're eating really well, they're exercising, they're running every day. But I found for myself that I would take those months off alcohol and I would run every single day. And so that was my way of distracting myself. Where alcohol was a distraction before, I would become hyper-focused and obsessed with something that seems very virtuous and well-meaning, like exercise or work. But it was just another form of distraction to kind of stop me from looking at some of those deeper things that alcohol had me skating around the surface of, but those other things just replaced alcohol. So yeah, you're so right. There's that underlying thing that we actually need to look at. And alcohol acts as a really great distraction for that for a really long time.
For a really long time. So can you paint me a picture? Because I love hearing about where people are up to in sort of the, you know, the grand scheme of things when they have this, and I love that yours was so non-dramatic and like not, it was just like, I'm just going to tip that wine down the sink and the bottle. You know, where were you up to? Paint me a picture about what your work-life relationship situation was going on for you, because I want to try and, I'm going to try and pinpoint, and like, I'm not a psychologist, but I love psychology, of like, why that time was different, like why July 2018 was different to all of the other months off. So what was a sort of weekly snapshot?
And I love that you asked this, Maz, because it was so different at that time to how it had been before for everything that had come in the years leading up to that. So at that time, I was 36. I was just turning 35, actually. It was 2 weeks before my 35th birthday. And I had separated from my ex-husband. I was co-parenting my two sons with my ex-husband. I was in a new relationship. And so it was a time of freedom and independence for me that I had never really felt like I'd had as a woman. I met my ex-husband when I was just 19 years old, got married really young, had my kids really young. And so I could see that I was clearly living out those 20 something years in my mid 30s. So it was really interesting because I would have a couple of days off from having my kids in the middle of the week. And that would be when I'd go to the city and stay with my partner and we would go out and have some drinks and go for dinner. And so that was almost like my weekend would be in the middle of the week. And then it would get to the weekend. And sometimes I would have my sons and sometimes I wouldn't. But there would always be alcohol there. You know, we might be at a friend's house for dinner and there would be some drinks, or people would be at our house and there would be drinks. So it kind of felt like this rolling weekend all of the time. Like there was a weekend in the middle of the week and then there was the weekend. So it just felt like this kind of never ending cycle for me. And it was really interesting because at that time, my sons at the time were 6 and 9. And I think I became more and more aware of the fact that 50% of the time I was the sole responsible adult for my children. And if something were to happen to them when they were at home with me, I wouldn't be able to take them to the hospital in the middle of the night if that had to happen, you know, because I was what I often call an accidental daily drinker. I was drinking every day. I would say I wouldn't drink. Dinner time would roll around. I'd find myself with a glass of wine in my hand. And I started to realize that I didn't want to be that parent. I didn't want to not be able to be there for my sons if they needed me in the middle of the night. And there wasn't the guarantee of that other responsible adult in the house to kind of like pick up the slack if I wasn't able to do it. So I think at that point, as they were getting older, and more so now, you know, they're 14 and 11 now, and I want to be able to be that mother when my 14-year-old calls me and says, I'm at this party, I need to get out, can you come and get me? That 100%. I can, at the drop of a hat, just pick my car keys up and go get them. And that feels in and of itself like a good enough reason to not drink again. I mean, there's a million other reasons. But for me, being able to be that mother, especially as a co-parent where there isn't necessarily another adult in the house to help, was really important for me. So I think that's what made the difference at that time, is looking further down the track of not just who do I want to be as a woman, but who do I want to be as a mother, and what example do I want to set for my children around alcohol? Because alcohol had been this ever-present thing in my life. I grew up in Glasgow with a, you know, Irish Scottish family. Alcohol was just this ever-present thing in our lives. And so for me, I really wanted to kind of break that cycle for my sons and show them an example of being able to live a fun and creative and fulfilling and exciting and rich life that alcohol didn't have to play a part in that. So yeah, being an example to them was a real motivator for me as well.
So first of all, your boys are super lucky that you,
thank you,
just stepped up and put on your mum pants and went, you know what, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this without a glass of wine in my hand. Because look, I have a four-year-old son and parenting's hard, man. Like, you know, and just because I'm sober, it doesn't mean that my child is not completely unreasonable and absolutely bonkers, off the wall, insane most days. I just feel that because I'm sober, I have a slightly bigger capacity to be able to use some other tools to try and negotiate with a four-year-old, which is really hard.
Absolutely.
So well done. And, you know, as you were explaining that season of your life and the contemplation of not just future self, but like future mum to these two boys who they're only ever going to call you mum, the word that came to my mind was freedom. Because I feel like, I think you only get this on the other side of having your last drink, that I think we drink to escape. And we think that that's freedom. So it's like, I'm going to escape my responsibilities. It's a weekend. I have two weekends a week, you know, that you can live in escapism from the daily grind, the rat race, the responsibilities that we have, because they can be overbearing. But what actually happens when you give up alcohol is you gain complete freedom, because you now have the freedom to decide whether or not you're getting in the car to go and get your son out of a crap situation, or you have the freedom to go down to the supermarket and get yourself a tub of ice cream if it's been a bad day and you feel like having ice cream. You've got so many more options, which is essentially freedom. And alcohol robs you of all of those options. Alcohol entraps you and it keeps you so stuck. And then we don't know how to get unstuck. And so that was kind of what I felt you have experienced. Like, you've really tapped into this level of freedom that as an adult and a parent you don't get unless you decide to not drink alcohol. That's my assessment.
Yeah, absolutely. And my three values in our family are freedom, joy, and peace. And they are like guiding lights. And within the context of alcohol, there is more of all three of those things in a life without alcohol. And you're so right. It's such an entrapment to have that tethering to alcohol. And it's a pretty unfulfilling and uncreative life is what I realized. Yeah, I was terrified to give up drinking and become that boring sober person. Like, no one in my life would ever have said that I would be the sober person, including me. Like, it did not seem like a fun time for me at all, you know, the prospect of not drinking ever. But I realized that life is pretty boring with alcohol, because it's just, you know, it's maybe a slightly different setting. You might be at a beautiful winery or a lovely pub or a lovely restaurant, but you're doing the same thing over and over again. So I realized that life became so much more creative and joyful without alcohol, and much more of that kid-like energy. You know, there was so much more variety and texture to life. And, you know, being able to go out and do fun things with my boys, it felt like so much more vitality had been like injected into my life by just removing this one thing, which was just amazing to discover. And I would watch my boys, you know, we lived down on the Mornington Peninsula by the beach, and I would watch them in the summer, and And, you know, we have this association with, like, you know, summer and rosé, or summer and, you know, a cold beer on the beach or whatever it might be. And I would watch my boys playing on the beach, and alcohol was playing no part in their experience. And they were having those beautiful, present, fun time. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I want some more of that. I want to be able to enjoy that kind of more sustainable, longer term joy, rather than these quick fixes in the moment that only leads to the, you know, the quick decline afterwards. And so having more of that stability of my energy was something that felt really attractive to me, rather than this roller coaster of the highs and lows that inevitably comes with alcohol, that we try and flatten that curve, you know, with so many different things, whether it's, you know, with food or with exercise or with work. But being able to just remove alcohol, like, everything just settled down and the pace of life just became so much richer and sweeter. So yeah, these were things I didn't expect. You know, I expected the usual benefits of getting better sleep and feeling more focused, and, you know, the materialistic things like having better skin and losing some weight and all of those things. But yes, those things happened, but the other things, like just this slowing down of time and being more present and more of those natural, sustainable highs of life, were just this real sweet gift that I hadn't really expected to be as fulfilling and as joy-giving as they actually were.
We'll get back to the conversation in just a sec. This podcast is proudly brought to you by Buds and Beads Sparkling Tea, the perfect blend of refreshment and sophistication. Elevate your moments with exquisite tea infused with natural botanicals. Sip, sparkle, and savor the flavor for true indulgence. Buds and Beads Sparkling Tea, where every bubble tells a story. Cheers to a sip above the rest. And now, back to the conversation.
You mentioned something before that I just want to just get your thoughts on, about you didn't want to become that sober, boring person. And I didn't either. And I hear it a lot of people who reach out and they're like, I really want to give up alcohol, but I don't want to become boring. And I'm still trying to formulate and curate, like, the best response to help, not to entice people into sobriety, but to articulate that that is just absolute bullshit. And
I completely agree. Yep.
I don't know where we got that from. Like, where, in what society have we been brought up in where the sober person is the boring person? Because I was so afraid of that too. And what I found was, I'm more expressive, creative, productive, fun, probably more highly embarrassing for my small child. And I'm like, I'm so free and I'm so me. And I wasn't those things when I was drinking. And so, and you, it sounds like you felt a bit the same and you've discovered the same thing. Any thoughts on where that seed has been planted, and what, and it is just grown into this myth that we, it, a belief so strong that it will stop us from taking our last drink because we're like, well, don't want to be boring.
Absolutely. And I think that, I'm not quite sure where it started, but I think, here's my take on it, that it's become this collective agreed upon thing that sobriety equals boring because people don't want to face the potential that they may have to reassess the relationship with alcohol. And so I found that in a lot of my friendships that I had, because I was first at the bar, last at the bar, like, that was my reputation. And so a lot of the friendships that I'd cultivated as that version of me didn't last the transition into me being someone who just didn't drink. And I was prepared for that and knew that that would most likely be the case. But what was really interesting was, a few people would really challenge me on why I felt I needed to stop drinking. And whether it was my birthday or their birthday, or we were out for a girls' night or whatever it may be, this encouragement of, well, you'll have just one tonight, right? And what I realized was that me not drinking was such a mirror to their own relationship with alcohol. And I know that most people who have stopped drinking have found this to be the case in one form or another. So I think if we believe that sobriety equals a boring life, then we're all just going to kind of enable each other to continue to drink. Because if we all agree upon that, no one wants to be boring. So we'll all just pretend like it's not happening. It's that kind of elephant in the room, yeah. I think. So it is a real disruptor when you stop drinking and you become more fun, because it kind of like, you know, throws a cat among the pigeons with that theory of sobriety equals a boring life. And so a lot of people don't want to consider it. They don't want to consider that life could be more, but it's going to cost them this identity they have around alcohol, which is completely fine, right? Everyone, you know, has their own choice of whether they want to drink or not drink. But I found that it was really interesting, the people who were uncomfortable with my decision to stop drinking and what they potentially thought that I thought about their drinking if they drank more than me. And I was choosing to stop. What did that say about their relationship with alcohol? So yeah, I think it's a bit of a defense mechanism for us all to kind of, you know, drink the Kool-Aid, so to speak, you know, where if we all just agree upon this thing that alcohol is fun and sophisticated and it's what adults do, then we can all just continue to do that and not have to face the harder questions or that those things that need to be looked at that sit just underneath the filter of alcohol.
And it is funny too, because I definitely know when I stopped drinking at first, I'd be in social situations and I would feel really uncomfortable. I didn't know what to do with my hands. I ate a lot of cheese. I was just like, I don't know how to exist in this space, because everyone else is just drinking gin and tonics and I'm here with my tall glass with some water and some lime and I'm really hungry. And it took me a while to really, I think, assess the room. And what I had stumbled on pretty early on was like, actually, you guys are really boring.
Absolutely right. Then,
you're boring me. Like this, I've heard this story 3 times and you're just slurring a little bit more this time and I'm tired, the sun's going down, I don't want to do shots of tequila. This is so boring. Mm. I'm getting up early for a walk. I'm out. And it took months and months to really accept the reality of, okay, now these environments are boring to me because I'm not included in the cluster. I'm not on anyone's level. I'm not necessarily above or below. I'm just on a different page. And so I do think you lean into and you find people and things that support your sobriety.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel the same, like living on the Mornington Peninsula, like there's just winery central down here. And it's beautiful. Like, you know, the landscape is beautiful. Like I love to go to these wineries and have food and have, you know, a beautiful time with my friends and with my family. But I feel really lucky that I can be in those environments and not feel triggered and not feel that I can't trust myself, you know. And that was a really big thing for me. I didn't want to be someone who had this ironclad willpower that could resist alcohol. I wanted to be someone who just didn't have to consider it. There was none of this like self-negotiation of like, I can't be in this environment. I can't be around people who are drinking. I love the environment of the pub growing up in the UK. You know, it's a big part of our kind of culture and lifestyle. And I love how inclusive it can be for so many people. And so I love that I can still do that. But it was really interesting. And I know you've spoken about this before, Maz, that idea of when you go to the bar and you're newly sober and you're like apologizing for not drinking alcohol. And sorry. I found that in myself. Like I would find, I would say, I'll just have a soda and lime. And I'm like, stop saying just. Like stop apologizing to the bartender for not putting alcohol in your glass. Like they don't care. Like it doesn't make a difference to them. But I felt this like apologetic undertone to everything I would say, and justifying why I wasn't drinking. And filled in the numerous questions from people of, are you pregnant? Which I'm sure every woman, you know, in her 20s, 30s, 40s gets when it comes to choosing not to drink. And it was funny because I just didn't push against that one. I just was like, well, time will tell. You know, a year down the line when there's no baby, like that will work itself out.
Yeah. And I think too, it's like those moments are really tricky. And again, it's like a real deterrent for people because they're like, oh, what am I going to tell people? What are they going to think? Are they going to assume that I was out of control, chaotic? And they might, but you can't control that. Like, you know, having your last drink is a lot about letting go of people pleasing and letting go of perception. Like, it actually doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. They're going to think what they think. What matters is that you're living your truth, your best life, and you're doing what feels and fits right for you. And but that is, like, I'm saying that so off the cuff and like I'm a freaking pro. That is something that I still struggle with 100%. And I think this is why some people go so hard into sobriety, because we need identity. So if you've identified as that girl at the bar who's the first to arrive and the last to leave and do it, you know, all the carry on, sobriety can quickly become the replacement identity. Like, well, now I'm just a sober person and here are all the, you know, and
yes,
it's, you know, I don't necessarily think that's a negative thing. I haven't really unpacked it, but I think some people are like, well, I don't want to stop drinking because then I'm going to have to like write a book and start a podcast and have a sobriety community and convert all of these other people. Like, it's Scientology. It's not. I just want to take the pressure off. Like, there's enough podcasts, and if that's what you want to do because it ticks a box for you, which is why I do this, it's so selfish. This helps me. And I love asking questions. Like, it ticks so many boxes for me personally. But you don't have to go and do all of those things. You just have to not drink alcohol if that's going to be your best choice for your best life, and keep it simple.
Totally. And I think that transference from being the identity of, you know, the happy, you know, party bar girl to now being this sobriety evangelist that's trying to convert everyone. Like, it's really easy because it's another big identity. And so to just have it be a thing that's pretty neutral can be tricky to navigate that, to not just like transfer it over to somewhere else. But I found for me, when I say to people, and I don't even use the term sober or sobriety, I use it in some instances where people, it's just easier for people to kind of understand. But for me, I don't identify with necessarily being sober or being in recovery. Like, neither of those terms really resonate with me. I just choose to not have alcohol in my life, or choose to live alcohol free. The idea of recovery for me, I never felt like I was an alcoholic to the point of there being this like dependency. There was no epic rock bottom that I'd hit that I had to come back from. I hadn't, you know, lost my license, lost my job, lost my kids, any of that stuff, which made me feel like a bit of a fraud, I have to say. Like, in those early days, I was reading these like sobriety memoirs, which, you know, is a step for a hint if you're wondering if you should stop drinking alcohol. And I would read these stories of these like amazing women who had these like massive epic rock bottoms and had come back from it. And I thought, well, who am I to give up alcohol? Like, my life is nowhere near as tragic as these women. And I think that's what stops a lot of women, especially, from making that choice, because they don't feel like it's the only option out. And that's usually the thing that I talk to people most about when they're curious about not drinking. Me being able to say I wasn't an alcoholic, I genuinely didn't have a dependency on it, I could stop, my life was good by many standards, but I knew that this was something that could potentially get out of hand and take me to that place a little further down the track. And I just wanted to make a different choice. But it can be really hard to make that different choice when there aren't so many things at stake at that moment. You know, we really have to back ourselves and have the courage to do something that is going to feel awkward. We're going to feel like Bambi trying to get her legs again, you know, and especially in those social situations. But I think that's the thing, like, we don't have to have these epic rock bottoms to make a different choice around alcohol and how much of a part of our life we want it to be.
I love it. Well said. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's been so lovely to chat.
I could chat to you for hours, mainly because of your accent and you're really smart. I like talking to smart people.
Same. I would happily chat to you all day, Maz. So let's do this again.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you click follow so you don't miss an episode. New episodes are published every Monday. You can follow us on TikTok at Last Drinks or catch up with me on Instagram at Maz Compton. Stay curious.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.